Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume, Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. Hartley, good afternoon. Nice colored hoodie you've got there. I see we both decided to choose very bright dark blue today. Great hoodie choice. And did you have a great, well, not Thanksgiving for you, but Black Friday, Cyber Monday? Pick up anything good? See any good deals?
I did. So I finally impulse bought some Sonos Ace headphones, which I'm
Hartley
hoping.
Impulse buys.
I know that I'm so indecisive that I will prevaricate about something for months and then will impulse buy. And that is precisely what I've done here. And the idea is that they will replace my AirPods Max. I've decided to go for those instead of the USB-C variant of the AirPods Max, because I just, ever since I've been having issues with my AirPods Pro, which I've talked about quite extensively over some previous episodes, I've been far more reliant on my AirPods Max. But this also means that I have been quite a lot more physical pain. And I don't really want that. I want a much more comfortable set of headphones, but still with a, you know, decent feature set, good active noise cancellation. And you've had nothing but good things to say really about the Sonos Ace. So I think it was time I got a good deal. So that's my plan.
I do really like it. You should also get a Sonos soundbar at some point. Do you already have a soundbar for that TV behind you?
I don't. I actually, the main reason is because when I watch TV, I mainly have got in the habit of watching with over-ear headphones.
Oh, well, there you go.
So I probably will end up doing that anyway. But I think the switching feature between the soundbar and the Sonos Ace is very cool. So at some point, I probably will pick one up.
I was going to say, if you ever want a break from using your headphones, you want to toss it onto the soundbar, you can do that, and then you can flip back. That's why I really like it. And then they just sound good, and they look good, and they're very lightweight and comfortable. This is not a Sonos ad, by the way. Just thought it would be really good to express how good they are, because honestly, they are really good, and I think they're vastly underrated in some aspects. I picked up two Sonos Era 100s for the sole purpose of research. So for those who want to subscribe to the channel, if you haven't done so, but I will be testing them out to see if they work as desktop speakers, because they sound so good. I would love to see if they could work with the Mac with minimal to no lag. And I'll just spoil one part, as in they do definitely work because they have Bluetooth and line in, but how well and how good are they? You'll have to wait. And if you've ever been thinking about doing that, well, hopefully I can provide an answer for you. It is a little bit of a expensive set. I guess it's about what, $250 a piece, so $500. How much do desktop speakers run? Well,
they can run pretty expensive. You buy some premium KEF speakers or something like that.
Yeah. And so then you get versatility with the Sonos ones too. So I mean, you got
to
look
at. Can you continue to AirPlay to them even when they're used in that configuration?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
That's great.
Oh, yeah. So, depending on your setup, we'll get into it more in, because I thought it would be a cool video, because I've been looking it up myself just to see if that was something that you can do. And there was like one person out there, and I wish I knew who it was. It was just a smaller channel, but like, shout out to that guy for having a really good video that gave me this inspiration. Like, you know what? I'm going to try the same thing and see how well it works for my Mac setup. We'll be doing that. Also this week, we've got a couple of stories that we're going to run through. It's, you know, we're hitting up against that time where it's the end of the year and things are starting to slow down. On that quick note there, only three episodes left. So this one and then the next 2 weeks. And then we're going to take a little bit of a break, and we will pick things up again after CES. So around the second week of January. Let me confirm that, actually. Okay, so no episodes on the 3rd and 10th, but we will be back the 17th. So we'll have a few weeks off, which is good for both of us. Hartley, you deserve a break, you know?
Thank you. So do you,
take some time. Well, I'll be in CES, which is why we're doing that. Yeah. But not quite a break, but at least, you know, a little bit of a different shake up there to my schedule. This episode of the Mac Rumor Show is sponsored by Public Rec. Now, for those of you who have been watching the YouTube version of this podcast, you may or may not have noticed that every once in a while I've had this really nice waffle knit hoodie on, and that's from today's sponsor, Public Rec. I've actually worn clothes from them in the past, so I was super excited that they wanted to sponsor this episode because these are some pretty high quality clothes at an affordable price. Now, you couldn't see my pants, but these are probably the best part of what Public Rec has to offer. The Daymaker pants look like really nice, acceptable pants for nearly any occasion, but they feel and fit a lot like joggers. They're super stretchy, elastic waist for max comfort, absolutely fantastic. These Daymaker pants, they come in 10 different colors. Now, I went with the navy to kind of match the waffle gray knit hoodie that I wear a lot, but I'm telling you, these pants are mega comfortable no matter what size you are. Stop suffering in regular pants and give the gift of comfort this holiday season. For a limited time only, our listeners get 20% off when you use code MAC at checkout. That's 20% off with the code MAC, M-A-C, at publicrec.com. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. So please, 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 if you can, support our show and tell them that we sent you. Say goodbye to pants that put up a fight, because when comfort meets style, you found Public Rec. Thanks, Public Rec, for sponsoring this episode. All right, so we've talked about this before, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, but I am very intrigued by the latest report from our good old pal Ross Young, who says that Apple's going to be entering the foldable market finally in 2026. How much should we put into this that it's actually going to happen finally in 2026? Do you think this is true, or is this just, you know, not bad info, but like, is it just a projection mostly?
I think at this point it is still a projection. It's important to remember we are still effectively 2 years out from that. And with the way that Apple's product development cycles work, Apple could easily still push that back if it encounters problems. However, I think it is important to mention that there has been such a confluence of reports about Apple's foldable work in recent years. And I think actually that has sort of quietly ramped up in the background over the past year or so. They definitely appeared to go through a phase of encountering a lot of difficulties with their foldable project, and it looked like they were going to put a lot more emphasis on a foldable iPad and scale things back a little bit. But it does look like they've been talking to suppliers and they have been preparing the supply chain ready for a foldable in the next few years. So I think it is highly likely, and Ross Young is incredibly reliable, so we have to take him at his word on this one.
We've had him on the podcast before. Maybe we'll have to have him on again, hopefully soon. We can talk about this even more and maybe some more projections for, you know, 2025 and all of that. But so it seems like if this is going to be an iPhone, that it's going to be more of a Samsung Galaxy Z Flip, more so than a Fold style, where it's, you know, folding out to a bigger display. This is more of like full iPhone being cut down in half, which is probably the most practical and the one that I would really want more, because I know I would use it more, and that it just makes the most sense from a functionality standpoint. But I am intrigued just to see in general how well Apple can do with this. And what do you think would be different and hopefully better than some of the competition out there? I would imagine that front screen, when you fold it down, that has to be something. Or maybe, do they even not do that at all? Maybe they don't put a screen there. I mean, I doubt it, but I could see that just being the only purpose of this is that you can just fold up your phone a little bit more so that you have more space in your pocket. But there's got to be a screen there. You got to add something.
I agree. And I think it makes sense for Apple to start with this particular foldable design as opposed to the one that opens out more like a book. Because that would require more software optimization.
Yes. Whereas not much you have to do for this one.
Yeah, this they can just leave it alone and then focus on that front display. And I think also the familiarity of the iPhone is retained. If you took your iPhone 16 Pro Max right now and folded that in half, that's basically the sort of experience I imagine you would get from this device. And I think that when Apple does move into a new design, or a new area like this, it definitely likes to retain elements of familiarity because the brand is so powerful that users will associate this with being an iPhone if it folds that way, I think, rather more strongly than if it were to fold like a book.
I fear that that front display software, though, is going to be like basically an Apple Watch kind of style there. And like, while that would probably be fine, you know, a lot of these companies where I think like the better ones, you know, I like the Samsung Galaxy Z Flip. I think it's really well done. Excellent hardware. Software is pretty good. But like, you're still, after all these years, what, we have six of them right now. After the sixth generation, we're still limited on what you can do on that front screen. Like, you can't open full apps. Some apps, yes. But like with the Motorola one, it took them a couple of years to simply just be like, here, you want a small version of your phone on the front? Go for it. Open up whatever you want. We don't even care. And like, I know that that's not quite what Apple likes to do with certain things, especially things that are new. So I wonder what those limitations would be. What do you think it would look like on that front screen?
I can only imagine that it would be similar to WatchOS. Or possibly when it first comes out, I wouldn't even be surprised if it was even simpler than that, if it was very similar to widget smart stacks.
That's what I was thinking, yeah, with the watch.
Which is effectively like what standby mode is.
Yeah.
Standby mode lets you have two big blown up interactive widgets, which really on a front display for a foldable iPhone, I would just be happy to have a foldable iPhone. And sure, if I could get my reminders and my calendar and I can just swipe through them and it's nice and simple, that's good enough for now. I don't know if it really needs to do an enormous amount more than that. If they do want to do more than that, then maybe it could effectively run WatchOS. But what would the purpose be of that? What apps would I actually want to run on WatchOS when I would not just open my phone?
Well, okay. So the basics, in my opinion, that need to be done would be some sort of way to quickly respond to messages and the ability to type it out. So that would be something that I'd want to do. If I don't need to open up my phone to just get like a couple, like a quick message spun off, like I think that would be great. Obviously you'd want, and like my fear is that the worst simple case is that it's just going to be an always on display with the same style of always on display that we have right now, which is kind of useless. I mean, you can see some things, but you can't do anything with it. And so I want to be able to have the ability to do things when I need to. But you're right, there's not like a whole ton. I probably don't need to be going into a ton of apps, but the camera needs to be able to work, because that's a huge selling point for selfies, is that you have the actual main camera as your selfie camera right then and there, because you can just kind of have it in like a half clamshell, you know, opened up and just pointed at you and be able to see yourself and take a picture. So I think that's useful. And I'm guessing they'll do something like that, but I don't know. I guess if it was the implementation that we have now with Samsung, where it's still restricted, but there's a lot more widgets and there are a couple of apps, YouTube for some reason is one of them, that might be kind of nice. Like podcasts, like music, something that you can control easily without having to flip open your phone, like good widgets that way. I'd be fine with that. But like I said, Motorola, straight up, you can have a mini home screen and then just open up apps and they resize relatively well. Do we need that for every app? No, but yeah, that's where I'm at with it. I just want to see something. I just want some kind of new device from Apple.
I think the timing will be right for it. We've discussed on previous episodes how the upgrades that the iPhone lineup is receiving are generally getting smaller. I know people have been saying that for a very long time. But I think it is true now more than ever. And I think that the iPhone 16 lineup really showed that. If we even take a look at the iPhone 15 Pro and we ignore features like the titanium chassis, which for all intents and purposes we think is going away now. So it's being canceled out, that change. Really, these devices, the amount of new features we're getting generation over generation are very small now. And I think that Apple is eking them out before the next big thing, which should be the foldable. And I think that that will reinvigorate the iPhone a little bit for a fair number of years and will also enable Apple to charge a higher price for the iPhone. A little bit like with the iPhone X, because the iPhone X Apple was able to justify that $1,000 price point and push it above everything else because it was so different.
Yeah.
I can absolutely see that happening with foldables, and it's a way to redefine the device all over again, which should keep us going for another, I don't know, 5 or 7 years.
Well, then you can go not only like a flip style, but then a fold style. And then if you want to start doing the iPad,
there's so many more opportunities to do interesting things with that front display and the software. And is it going to let you plug into an external display for Stage Manager because you're going to say that it runs iPadOS now because it's a larger display?
There's Apple all kinds silicon of, in a fold. Ooh.
All this kind of thing that I think they have the potential to lean into, at least majoritively for marketing purposes. They have a lot more marketing potential that they can get out of foldables, especially if they do have some key differentiators from Samsung, which if they use glass displays, which is what we are expecting them to do, will be significant. It will just be very interesting to see Apple's take on this, because I don't think that Apple is going to just come into this space and do exactly what Samsung is doing. They will have their own unique perspective on this.
I hope not. But also, I like what Samsung's is doing. So like if they did do that, I don't think anybody would be disappointed from like a user standpoint. Like they're actually going to be really good. The one thing, though, remember last week, we talked about the iPhone 17 Air? Yeah, like this makes sense. So if that's 2025 and we get that really thin iPhone, what did I say I want to do with that?
Yeah,
just fold it in half. So I wouldn't be surprised if it looks a lot like that, just folded in half. Different hinge, obviously, because there are no hinges on any iPhones currently, or at least none that are visible. I don't know what's going on the inside, nothing that would indicate a folding iPhone yet. So that, to me, makes the most sense, but who knows? And hopefully this report, you know, like we said before, Ross definitely has great information all the time. Hopefully this projection's right, because second half of 2026 is right now the current rumor. And I mean, that would put us at September, would make sense for an iPhone.
That would be the iPhone 18.
Yeah. Remember I said the 17 Air was, I was referring to it as, that's 2025. Then 2026, you take that 17 Air design and you fold it, and that's the iPhone 18. So we have the 18 fold. Well, what are they going to call it? That's the other thing. Don't do
Ultra. I don't think they're going to put fold in the name. No, very unlikely. Yeah. They're going to say that this is the best iPhone form factor, and therefore it is an iPhone Ultra. So you'll have the iPhone 18, the iPhone 18 Air. I wouldn't even be surprised if by then they align the 18 models to be the same design that was introduced with the 17S. You will have the iPhone 18 Air, but in two display sizes. And then you will have the iPhone 18 Pro, the iPhone 18 Pro Max, and maybe above that, the iPhone 18 Ultra, which folds.
Interesting. Yeah, the naming is going to be everything there, because if you don't think they're going to do fold, then I don't know where they go. But as long as they don't do what Pixel did with the... It was the Pixel Fold. That was fine. We were okay with it. And then they were like, you know what? Now it's the Pixel 9 Pro Fold. And we're like, wait, what? Where did that come from? So we'll see what happens with that. That's Apple's current foldable rumor there. And then we had... Okay, so last time we talked... I want you to clear some up because I'm confused. And perhaps maybe you are as well. In which case, that'll make me feel a lot better. Last time we talked about Apple's 6.7-inch or 7-inch smart rectangular, whatever it was going to be, or square display for this command center, right? Now we're getting reports from Ming-Chi Kuo that there's a new HomePod that's going to have a display. Like, and before I thought it was pretty like clear that like, oh no, it's not going to be a HomePod. It's just a display. Right. So now what is happening? Are these two different products coming out in 2025?
The rumors suggest that they are separate products. And both have been rumored for quite a long time. It's just a little bit strange to me with the timing. It's strange to me because I don't know how Apple would easily market these devices alongside each other at the same time, because they are both rumored to come out in the second half of next year after WWDC. So that is two separate smart home devices running this new software, both with 7 to 8 inch displays at the same time.
So you're confused too, is what you're telling
me. I wouldn't say I'm confused. What I'd say is that it's interesting that these reports are circulating simultaneously, and they have been for a very long time, because we actually were expecting this HomePod with a display to come out this year. We've even seen the components for that leak ages ago, and it just looks like the current HomePod, but with a new piece of top glass on it that includes an LCD display. So that's been in the works for a long time, and it's that sort of disappeared until we got these most recent reports that now suggested that was delayed until late next year. It just is interesting to me that that is the exact same time period that Mark Gurman is saying we are getting this square command center with a very similarly sized display. I think what is very clear from all of this is that Apple is moving very hard into the smart home, because we also have had reports about their work on a smart home camera device, which would rival products, you know, like Ring or whatever it may be. From lots of companies offer that sort of thing with little cameras that pan and tilt.
Yeah, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, if Apple does that, I think they would be instantly one of the best-selling cameras on the market, because I feel like everyone has... Well, it also depends on the price, because, you know, it's Apple, so... Everyone has good enough smart home stuff, right? But no one's, like, truly great. I feel like I've tried every... At least from a camera perspective... I feel like I've tried every single camera, like most of the biggest brands out there, and every one of them doesn't do something quite right. Or like there's like one thing where you're like, or they just don't work with HomeKit and like they're not matter. They don't go with all the, like it's just, there's always one little thing. Right now for me, Ring, those are actually pretty reliable. Really enjoy that. My biggest gripe is that the battery dies quickly, but that's my choice for choosing the battery one and not doing any solar powered or anything. So there's a fix for that. And the other thing is that it's just not available in HomeKit. But like also HomeKit cameras kind of suck, right? Isn't it just like every time I open up my HomeKit app, like it's always not recording anything or unresponsive until I like actually dive into it. So I feel like Apple in theory should be able to make something that would work really, really well, and then would make these other ancillary products that go with it much more enjoyable. So now you have cameras around your outside of your home, let's say, monitoring. You get a doorbell, also one of those huge things that they can dive into. Now you're going to get that up on your Apple TV, which you can do that with some of the products now, but like, you know, the first party integration is just going to be so much better amongst all of your devices. So I just feel like that would be amazing. I just didn't think that they would ever do something like this. So I'm really happy to hear that, because more smart home products from Apple, the better, in my opinion, just because I would like to find one ecosystem of things that fits all of my needs and not have a bunch of different... My house is a mess, man. I've got Google for some things. I've got Ring for the other one. Like, just, it's a mess. I need help.
I think Apple's reinvention of its home product lineup, because effectively it does have one right now that includes the HomePod Mini, the HomePod, and the Apple TV, will be its next big product line, because there are so many devices now rumored to be in the works, all in this category. We're expecting a successor to the HomePod Mini. There will at some point be a successor to the existing HomePod. Maybe that is the model with the screen. Then we have got the Command Center. Then we have got the version of the Command Center that is expected to be this high-end $1,000-plus version of it on a robotic arm. So that's just four.
Yeah, if you're going to do all this, you got to have other products that work with it.
And then we've got the camera, and then we have got the Apple next-generation Apple TV. And going back years, we've heard rumors about an integrated Apple TV HomePod. And even most recently, there were reports about Apple actually building a TV. Which reports we've not heard for a decade at this point.
All right. Well, what are you using at your house right now, smart home wise? Are you trying to do everything HomeKit? Is that working out for you?
Yeah. So I do everything HomeKit, but it's a cruel mistress, because it does not always work. But that is not. I don't feel like it's entirely on Apple. I feel like a lot of it depends on which brand. it's from, but sometimes it is just inexplicably disobedient. And I just want to turn the lights on, but they're just not responsive.
I feel like, well, because there's not many of these products that really show up on a first party basis from Apple in the HomeKit app. I mean, you have your Apple TV, you have your HomePod. What else is there? So there's nothing really, and those usually work okay, but like everything else, I'm going to do this right now. I'm going to open up the Home app and I'm going to tell you all of these products that I have are unresponsive easily. Like they're going to say, not responding. Here, I'll show you. For those who, no response. Those work. Those all are on and working. No response for just about everything. The only things that do work, Apple TV says it's paused. My thermostat works really well. Thanks to Google using Matter. High praise there.
Matter actually has not been so reliable for me. I set up my Philips Hue setup with Matter. And I actually have preferred it when I have reverted to doing it natively. But I don't know if that's just how they have integrated Matter. I think it's been a little bit of a bumpy integration. And by all means, my smart home setup works well enough for me, and I'm pretty happy with it. It works most of the time. I've got my smart thermostat and my underfloor heating. I've got a lot of Philips Hue. And then I've got my Apple TV and my LG TV in there as well. I've got a Sonos speaker, HomePod, and then I've got a bunch of sensors as well. Like I've got some window sensors, I've got a water leak sensor, I've got an Akara camera. So a range of accessories, and they work pretty well for me.
The AirPlay stuff works fine. Like Sonos would be fine. That's not an issue.
It's just I think that smart home stuff can become an obsession, and you can spend way too much time setting stuff up, and it's so hard to get it all perfectly optimized to what you need, and it encourages you to spend time thinking, oh well, at this hour I want my lights to be 5% brighter than at this hour. And I think you just need to take a step back and reevaluate your life choices if you're thinking about that, because I've fallen into that pit.
You can just get up and flip the switch, you know.
Exactly.
Which is hilarious, because I try to set up all these, you know, smart lights around the house, and then my kids come home and they're like, I'm just going to flip that switch. I'm like, no, don't do that. No. And you got to ask the person to do it. You got to ask the little box here. You got to say, ask Google if you can turn on and they're like, why would I do that when I could just flip the switch? And I'm like, you know what? I don't need you to come back with all of that logic. Okay. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just easier to do the non-smart home stuff. But I would be interested to see how Apple would approach that. Would they start making these products and making them better and something that would go off of your personal context of your devices and know what you usually do? A lot of these say they can do that, but then they don't really do a good job.
Well, so. Crucially, many of these devices are rumored to feature Apple Intelligence. So the HomePod that Ming-Chi Kuo is talking about is supposedly going to have the A18 chip and is going to run Apple Intelligence. And if Apple is building this new Home OS with Apple Intelligence at its core, that is going to touch the HomeKit architecture as well as how the Home app actually presents itself to users. So I think there are good things in store for us with all of this. And I'm really looking forward to it, because the Home app has never been that great. The redesign they gave it a couple of years ago was really good. And I have really loved some features. Like I really like adaptive lighting. I like the fact now that you can run shortcuts for more complicated smart home scenes and setups and things that you want to enable at particular times. And I do really like a lot of the accessories that I have. Otherwise, I wouldn't have spent so much money on setting them all up. But it's undeniable that it's not as good as it could be.
Yeah. By the way, all of the stuff that are unresponsive on my Home app are all Philips Hue lights. I need to look into.
I find just turning the hub off and on again fixes that for a while.
So when did they do Matter? Do I have to buy something new for this, or is it just an
upgrade? You should be able to update your hub to it. But I would be cautious about doing that, because I did it and it removes a lot of functionality. So like I just mentioned, I like adaptive lighting. Adaptive lighting is not supported in Matter.
I don't do any of that. Honestly, I just want them to be able to be on my app so that I can turn it on and off. More importantly, I would use it more if I had like a widget on my screen a little bit, you know, more present and there that works well. And I put the widget on there and none of the apps are responsive, so then it doesn't matter. Oftentimes some of our lights go out and I have to turn them back on because my kids are messing with it. And I do have like, because does the schedule work? I do have some things on a schedule.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know. We'll look into it. I want to hear from everyone that's listening, like what your favorite HomeKit products are, or are you not using HomeKit? Maybe you are like me who decided you wanted a smart display, which we use constantly for listening to music, doing timers for, you know, recipes and watching videos and stuff like that. So we use it all the time. And then it's just a nice little picture frame. So having it tied into, you know, the Photos app and using a lot of those features would be great. One last thing before we end this episode. What is your take on the Photos app? Did we talk about this on iOS 18?
Yeah.
I don't think we ever actually
don't love it.
Are you in that camp? Am I the only one who doesn't really care?
Like, I don't think it's... I don't hate it as much as some people.
Dude, some people hate it.
I don't find it really makes a difference to going through my feed.
Yeah, because like, I just go through all the photos. What do other people find that
having to scroll down and go to individual sections takes me longer.
What do you mean individual? Oh, like to get to like...
specific like albums and favorites and stuff. And I know you can pin it all, but it just takes so much more time to get that all exactly where I want it. And even then it feels like there's more friction with this app than there was before. The previous app was very simple. This is trying to have a much more, it's conceived around the idea of using the Photos app to consume photos, not around accessing photos quickly, which is fine, but chances are, if I just want to send someone a screenshot or something that is for a few weeks ago, and I've saved that to an album or I favorited it or whatever, I just want to go to wherever I know that is really quickly, which I could do far more easily before.
I guess. I think I use my Photos app weird compared to everybody else, because like to me, I just scroll through the all photos. And then if I can't find it, I search for what I'm looking for. And the search is getting better too, so that's always nice. But I literally just search for like...
Search is getting way better.
Like for parking, for when I'm at my studio, like sometimes I need to enter in my license plate. And now I have it memorized, but before I would just have a picture of my license plate on my phone and I would just search for license plate or my driver's license. You know how I forgot my wallet literally yesterday and I needed to pick up a package and they're like, do you have a license? And I was like, no. I don't, but I think I have a picture of it on my phone. And the way I found it was just searching for a license or ID and it shows up. So like otherwise, maybe screenshots would be the only thing that I need to get to quickly. And so maybe I need to like fidget around with that and move it up. But I only ever just scroll through endlessly on my all photos. And if I know it's in like a certain month, I just go up to that month or, you know, I don't know. So like to me, it never really like, oh, this seems the same to me. What is everybody like going on about? But I know the bottom of it is different. And if you're somebody who used those sections, then I guess I understand. Shameless plug, I'm going to be doing a video on how to like make it a little bit better. So go watch that if you're somebody who hates it. But all right, well, that's about it. Unless you have something else you want to run through for the week. I think in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be talking about what we've had all year round. I would love for people to send in their thoughts about their favorite Apple product that came out this year. Maybe if you picked up a Vision Pro, what your thoughts are on it. Maybe we'll read some of that on the episode, and then we'll look ahead in the final episode of the year to what's coming in 2025. All right, catch everybody in the next episode.
Hold up.
Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is so delicious, so unbelievable, no word exists to describe it. It's better than mind-blowing, it's mouth-blowing. Bright, citrusy, and spicy, this newest flavor from Captain Morgan is a balanced blend of sweetness with delicious notes of lime and slightly spicy chili flavor that is great for an escape outdoors with your crew or your next hangout. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime is best enjoyed as an ice-cold shot or as a chili lime twist on a classic as a spicy daiquiri. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, a touch of sweet, a kick of heat. Please drink responsibly. Captain Morgan's Sweet Chili Lime, premium Caribbean rum with natural flavors, 35% alcohol by volume. Captain Morgan Rum Co., New York, New York.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you'll agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.